We're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On the first half of this week's show, I'll be speaking with Kevin Hoffmeister and Kyle Nagy, the organizers of the country music dance party Boot Scoot USA. Fans of Indianapolis rap music may know Hoffmeister and Nagy as John Stamps and K-Nags. Prior to forming Boot Scoot USA, they were members of Ghost Gun Summer, an Indianapolis hip-hop collective that included Oreo Jones, Sirius Black, Freddie Buns, and Grey Granite. John Stamps and K-Nags will share their journey from rap to country music, and will discuss the growth of Boot Scoot USA from its origins at the Indianapolis Honky Tonk Club Dukes to a nationally touring event sponsored by Live Nation. And on the second half of this week's show, I'll talk with Sarah Acra, the founder of K-Pop Indiana. Over the last two decades, South Korean popular music, or K-pop for short, has experienced an explosion in global popularity. Sarah formed K-Pop Indiana to create a community for fans of the music here in the Hoosier State. John Stamps and K-Nags of Boot Scoot USA will join me in a moment. But first, let's listen to K-Nags remix of Neon Moon by Casey Musgraves. Let's go. John Stamps, K-Nags, thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here. Am I coming through all right?
Yep. I think it's been about 7 years since you both were last here. Something like that, right?
Crazy.
Six, seven.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, a little bit.
When I met you both, you were a rapper, John.
Right.
K-Nags, you were doing beats and DJing for hip-hop artists like Sirius Black. You were both kind of affiliated with the Ghost Gun Summer Collective, which included Oreo Jones, Sirius, Grey Granite, and some other local characters.
Freddie Buns,
yes.
Yep.
You're now the founders of Boot Scoot USA, a live event that mixes country music with hip-hop beats, and you also play some traditional country music as well. First of all, just tell me a little bit about, before we get into how this all happened, tell me about your history with country music individually. Is this something you listened to growing up?
Yeah, definitely. Like, usually when I explain the event to people, I usually just start off when they're like, I don't listen to country, I don't like country. I'll usually be like, if you grew up in the 90s, you probably are familiar with this stuff, because it was, a lot of it was pop radio at the time. You'd be in the grocery store and Shania Twain would be playing, you know? And so, like, Jess Littletown, for example, I remember we had her out to one of the Boot Scoots, and she was like, I didn't expect to like this. I didn't expect to know any of this music. I'm surprised at how familiar I am with it. But yeah, growing up, like 95.5, 97.1, those were like the radio stations that my parents listened to. And then I, you know, obviously loved hip hop too. So it was very much either like country music or hip hop and or hip hop growing up. So that's kind of the perfect storm of how we ended up, you know, doing what we're doing and where we're at today. Yeah.
K-Nags, what was your background in country?
My dad's entire side of the family are all musicians. My aunt is an incredible violinist. My grandparents played the trumpet, were music teachers, and they were really heavy into like bluegrass and country music. So at all my family reunions growing up, anytime our family got together, everyone had an instrument. I was, you know, had a little drum pad when I was a young kid, and I would participate, and through that kind of just fell in love with some of the sounds and some of the music.
And John Michael Montgomery, Angel in My Eyes, was my first ever performance at the talent show in kindergarten,
okay.
I remember.
Okay.
Just a little tidbit.
Appreciate that. You know, fast forward to, like I said, maybe like 2016, 17, you know, you guys have firmly entrenched identities in the Indianapolis hip-hop scene. How did you kind of pivot from your role in that scene to doing these events, Boot Scoot USA? I know it started at Duke's, but how did you kind of make that transition?
Yeah, it just started at Duke's with Dustin, who's passed away, but he was the original owner of Duke's. And we just kind of have gone to him. We'd been playing lots of shows, and we were arguably playing too many shows. And we're both, you know, since the jump, have been trying to make careers out of music in any capacity. And we saw a lane in, you know, these events. And we just kind of thought, like, through talking to Action Jackson, Ben, who's a friend, I just remember asking him, you know, because Real Talk is such a success, just picking his brain, like, you know, how do you do this? How do you figure this out? And he said, pick something that you like that you're not going to get sick of. And the more specific that is to you, the better off you'll be. And I kind of looked around and thought, you know, I really enjoy country music, and there's this really awesome venue. And, you know, let's see what can happen with that. And so we reached out to Dustin. He was like, from the jump, like, 100%, let's do this. And, you know, from that, we had already been doing some other smaller, you know, events around town. And it all kind of happened. I mean, it's a little blurry, but it definitely all just sort of evolved organically. And then all of a sudden, we kind of realized one day, like, okay, you know, we enjoy this. This is working. We're able to, you know, pay our bills off of this, which was, you know, quite frankly, never anywhere that we were close to with our hip hop stuff. It was a lot of, you make the money and then it goes back into the project and it goes into this and X, Y, and Z. But also a lot of what we learned in our 10 plus years of making music and doing tours with Ghost Gun Summer and that is all applicable to what we're doing now. You know, it was just kind of like, how can we apply what we've learned to this new venture? And, you know, the way we promote, the way we, you know, everything, perform, everything.
Yeah, we treat like our Boot Scoot events almost with some of the things that we have used in our hip hop events that typically you won't see in country, you know, DJ sets or performances. You know, as you mentioned before, you know, putting some hip hop beats under some country music and just kind of, you know, like dropping air horns during our sets. Like, we're just kind of having fun with it and applying that like hip hop side into the country music.
And the MC hosting aspect of that as well, I would say, you know, just constant interaction and engagement with the crowd. Back to Jay Moore, you know, would be like an excellent indie example.
Take
of that
Tuesdays.
Yeah,
which
is, for real, you know, like, so I'm excited about this interview because it gives us the opportunity to kind of draw some of these lines from, like, you know, where we come from and what inspired us and how we've applied this to what we're doing now. So,
and you started the country music parties at Duke's around 2019, is
yes.
that right?
Yeah.
I remember seeing like a Facebook post around that time advertising one of your events, and I was like, you know, a little taken aback and thought, what is this, like a novelty thing? You're going
right.
to do a couple of these and just get it out of your system or
right.
whatever. Did other people react that way? Like the Oreo Joneses, the Sirius Blacks, these artists you were working with in this rap scene, how did they take it when you said, hey, we're going to start doing a country music night at Duke's?
They've been very supportive. Yeah. We've had Oreo Jones at some of the earliest Boot Scoots, you know, in the DJ booth with us, hanging out, having a good time. And it's kind of like, you know, some of these people that may not have loved country music can still come out to our event and just have fun and enjoy themselves without even being super connected to the music.
And I think anyone who actually, you know, knows us on a personal level and gets us and our personalities, it wasn't as like shocking of a thing. It probably was like, yeah, this makes sense, you know.
No one thought you had lost your
right.
mind.
Yeah, yeah. Too many Lone Stars. I mean, they might have thought that, but, you know.
There's a long history of rap and country music coming together. There's an even longer history of black music in America interacting with country music. Louis Armstrong recorded with Jimmy Rogers back in the day. Do you want to say anything about that, the kind of precedence for what you're doing, mixing these two worlds together?
Yeah.
K-Nex?
I'm drawn very much to like country soul music, like Ray Charles and his country projects. Bobby Womack is one of my personal favorites that, like, as we've done this event, you know, I was familiar with some of these names, but going back through a lot of these catalogs and kind of learning more, I've really found myself fond of that mesh, that soul and that country music is really does it for me. So it's been fun kind of digging and going back through some of those artists.
Yeah, well said. John? Yeah.
And like what we were talking about before the interview, just trying to make the genre more available and more diverse and just opening up the audience to it, because typically with these types of events, you think of a certain type of crowd and a certain type of audience. And I think anybody could have fun at this type of event, and it's just a matter of making it feel accessible to anybody. So that's kind of been a big part of what we've been wanting to do from the jump, is to, you know, make a diverse, cool country event where, like I said, yeah, everybody feels compelled to come and have a good time.
This event started here in Indianapolis. It's really grown since 2019. You've done this event in cities around the United States. And just recently, Live Nation, who is one of the largest event marketing companies in the world, sponsored you guys essentially and booked a mini tour for you throughout the Midwest. Tell me about, you know, expanding this at such a rapid rate and how that's kind of gone for you. What are the reactions you're getting outside of Indiana?
So, yeah, during the pandemic, my friend Alex Koyan, who works at WME, he lives in Nashville, and he was like, you should move down here. I really think you could find, you know, a good footing with what you're doing with Boot Scoot down here. So, you know, when I moved down there, I started rubbing shoulders with, you know, different people and just really opened up my mind to kind of what is actually possible with this. And I think for me personally, getting out of Indianapolis and seeing how big the world is and how it really is possible to go and do this, you know, wherever, whenever, that was huge for me. But from there, you know, started doing it in Nashville, started reaching out to venues in Austin and in Miami, and in, you know, we've done it in Ohio, in Chattanooga. And it really was just a process of, when I first got to Nashville, I didn't know anybody and it was difficult to get booked. This is like the honest truth of it, right? And so I just started saying, okay, like, well, where can I do this at? And where do I know people at? And I just sort of started reaching out to people again, very organically, just the same thing that we would do when we were booking those DIY hip hop tours. Okay, so I want to do this in Austin. Let me find some DJs who are doing something similar in Austin, or find a venue that's doing something similar in Austin. Or I want to do this here. How can we expand this? And then just kind of gradually, you know, chipping away. And I think Austin at Latchkey was like a really big thing for us, because I started doing that monthly. And that kind of just kicked into like, okay, well, where else can we do this monthly? And then, you know, for a while we were doing Indianapolis, Miami, Austin, Nashville every month, just about. And then from that, I didn't even really like that wasn't even necessarily the game plan. It just sort of worked out that way. And then it just kind of was like, okay, well, let's keep going with this. And then I realized, you know, going to Live Nation and having all of these different places that we've done it at really just helped as a, like a selling point. Like, this works here, it works here, it works here. We're already doing it on our own in these 200 capacity venues and with some success. So it made it like a little bit more sellable of a thing for them.
K-Nags, any thoughts on that? The reception this has had? You were telling me earlier that you feel like the crowds have been more energetic outside of Indianapolis. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We performed in Louisville and Cincinnati, and in both venues, you know, we have no previous existing relationship with those cities or those markets. And so to show up and perform to, you know, a brand new crowd, people were very receptive. The energy was high. It was a great time. We had a lot of fun in those two markets. And it's just fun going to these new places and, you know, because it's one thing to do it here with all our friends and everybody supporting us, but to go to a brand new city and tap into that market, it's been a lot of fun for us.
Yeah, that's difficult to do, so
absolutely.
Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to play some of the music, some of the beats you've produced that you play at these events. First, I wanted to ask, though, where are your careers in hip-hop at this point? Is that still something you actively pursue? Is that on pause while you kind of take this new journey? Where's hip-hop kind of in your artistic identity right now?
Yeah, I would say the latter. I'd say we're still both very much, you know, inspired by the genre. I'd still say it's probably 75% of what we consume, you know? But yeah, it certainly has taken a pause, you know? It just was kind of one of those things where it's like, do we want to do two things half-butted? I don't think we cuss on this. Like, with half of our energy, or do we want to go all in? And kind of back to what I said about, like, this is working. Let's go all in on this and see where it takes us. And it certainly doesn't mean that we aren't interested in, you know, returning to music in general, you know, some releases. But, yeah, definitely for the time being, this is the our full focus. This is where we're at.
Understood.
Yeah.
And KNX, I do want to play some of the music you've produced for these parties. The first track we're going to hear is Casey Musgrave's Slow Burn. You did a disco remix of this track. Just speak generally about kind of the beats you're producing to play at these parties.
Yeah, I mean, it just has kind of expanded from, you know, country music. One thing that we've kind of applied is like blending music is not traditionally something you find in country events. You know, they let the whole entire songs play out. There's not really like tempo matching. It's kind of just, so for me, putting some beats under some of these songs that, you know, might not blend as well into each other is kind of a way for me to, you know, have them in my sets more accessible and just kind of mix it up a little bit, you know, just adding a new flavor to some of these songs that I already love as is, but just putting a, you know, a disco or a little hip hop spin on it is just fun for me. And it's fun when I play those out at the events and they're received well. That's like really what does it for me. So
let's listen to that track.
Perfect.
This is Casey Musgrave's Slow Burn, the KNAGS disco remix. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guests this week are John Stamps and KNAGS, the founders of Boot Scoot USA. And KNAGS, we just heard your remix of Casey Musgrave's Slow Burn. And you were talking about kind of the stylistic differences in your event compared to a traditional country music event. You know, some of the foundational tools of hip-hop DJing, like blending songs, you know, adding beats to pop records. How different is your event compared to like a standard night at a country music bar? Are there other folks doing what you're doing, or is this super unique in that scene?
There's definitely some other DJs in the space that are working on country events, but I think the energy and the feeling that we bring to Boot Scoot is definitely different. I mean, like Kevin was saying, you know, we have 10 plus years, 15 plus years in the hip hop space, throwing shows, marketing, we're fully in-house from the design to the website to the remixes. So I think that us having complete control and applying those tools that we've learned in the past kind of separates us.
And down to the performance aspects, you know, like we've talked about this, especially before the Live Nation tour, is how, you know, we look at the entire thing as a performance, right? Like, I'm singing half of the time almost, you know, it's keeping everybody as engaged as possible. We have the line dance instructor involved. We have stage visuals running that match the songs that we're playing, you know, call the actions with the audience and everything like that. Just like I said, trying not to let a minute go by where we aren't engaging with the audience or with each other, or just making it feel like just a full blown good time party, more than just a DJ in the corner in the dark with his cool on playing some records, which we also love, by the way.
Right. Well, and Kevin and I have just, I mean, had more fun with this than potentially we've ever had. I mean, we've, like, when we perform, we're truly having a blast and having a great time, and I think that just resonates with our crowd a lot of the time.
What are some of the, like, go-to songs you guys play at these events? You know, I read on the website that it's a lot of late 90s, early 2000s country music. What are, like, the bangers in the country music dance scene?
Everyone loves the ladies of country. You know, mm-hmm. Shania Twain, Faith Hill, Gretchen Wilson, Miranda Lambert.
I'm a sucker for the chicks, personally. That's what does it for me.
Yeah. Tim McGraw, Alan Jackson, you know, Garth Brooks. But yeah, and then, you know, we like, you know, it's a lot of reading the audience, you know, like, especially when I was doing this in Nashville or in Austin sometimes, it's like, you know, cause we'll have bands as special guests sometimes, and I'll be like, okay, like, these are some old school country folks. Let's get some Waylon and Willie going, you know, but definitely generally like our primary music is that 90s and 2000s sweet spot. It's almost like guilty pleasures, you know, really. Cause that's kind of what I found, especially in Nashville, is that, it is either people are fans of the much older stuff, like I said, you know, Willie Waylon era, or the current you know, and those are two very different audiences, which is where, like I said, we're kind of at this sweet spot in the middle of those two where there's a little bit for everybody, I think. So it kind of has sometimes like a campy element to it where it's like, even if you're not that familiar, put on a cowboy hat, throw on some boots and come have a good time. Or if you are familiar and these songs do hit you in that sweet nostalgic spot like us, like this is perfect for you, you know, because again, it's all about just giving people something that wasn't available before. And if you're a fan of 90s and 2000s country, it's like, where else can you go? And just for 3 to 4 hours, just nothing but that.
What's sort of the demographic that you're attracting to these events? Could you kind of, is it all over the map, or could
it's
you kind of
all over the
pinpoint
map.
It?
You know, like I said, here in Indy, it's super diverse. You know, we've got 21-year-olds and we've got 50, 60-year-olds. But when we did the tour, it was very much a, like a more current country fan, more blue collar, more 30 to 50. When we do it in Austin, again, it's younger, a younger, more diverse crowd. So it really just kind of depends on, you know, where we're doing it. And that's kind of been the other interesting thing. And, you know, how we promote this and how, what things can we do to kind of target these different groups to see who we can get out to these things. Because obviously, you know, anybody that wants to come out and have a good time with us, we're open to that. But like I said, we're always trying to make this a attractive event to bring out a diverse group of people and put people from all different backgrounds in the room together.
K-Negs, up next, I'm going to play your remix of Spurs by Ryan Charles. Anything you want to say about this track before we listen?
Absolutely. We actually went out with Ryan Charles on our Live Nation run. So prior to that, Kevin put me onto his music and just fell in love with it. And so I just wanted to, you know, kind of do that and showed it to Ryan and kind of see how he felt, because it was very different than the original track and he loved it as well. So it was just fun kind of meshing those worlds, and then to be out on the road with him was very exciting.
Yeah, we'll listen to that track now. This is Ryan Charles with Spurs, the K-Negs Dance Remix.
K-Negs.
Welcome to Boot Sweet USA.
She loves the Spurs, the way I dance in them boots, click, clap. Look, I'm drinking that Surfside, I'm slurring in this kitchen. I got all my twang, all my stone shining, tell it blink, blink. The bell buckle, the polo, the ring, then the wristband.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guests this week are John Stamps and K-Negs, founders of the Country Music Dance Party, Boot Scoot USA. I just have a few final questions for you guys. You know, a lot of your music making activity has been based in the Fountain Square neighborhood. You're doing shows at the Hi-Fi. You know, country music has a huge history in that neighborhood. There used to be clubs there like the Roundup, the Frontier, Fountain Square Tavern. Are you aware of any of that? Does that mean anything to you guys?
No. Yeah. Put me on, though.
Okay.
Walk me through a little bit of this, for real.
I mean, Laddie Moore, he was like the king of Indianapolis country music in the 1950s and played at all these clubs. And the Thunderbird.
Yeah, in Fountain Square.
In Fountain Square.
Okay.
Yeah, check his stuff out. He's, if you like Hank Williams and that like mid 20th century honky-tonk music, he's like a master of that music.
Well, I called my baby and I told her to be down at the juke joint waiting for me, because I'm a juke joint Johnny.
Even I know Duke's, where we do Boot Scoot now, used to be a place called the Ice House. And
yeah.
I remember telling my dad we were doing it. He was like, oh, yeah, we used to line dance there back in the day. So it's kind of cool to have like a full, and they still have a lot of the original neons from when it was the Ice House in there, actually. So, but no, and like we were talking about before, it seems like there's a lot of history in Indianapolis tied to the country scene that I'd love to hear more about.
Oh, yeah, so. There were clubs all over the city. So, yeah, you're part of a legacy here that
awesome.
Stretches back.
And we always want to respect our elders and respect where, you know, the culture of whatever we're a part of comes from. So, yeah, that's awesome.
And I'm just curious if either of you at any point in your lives maybe saw this in the future at some point. Did you ever think that you would be, you know, the face of a country music party that's going national? Is that something you ever thought about in the past? Did that ever seem like it was on the horizon for either of you?
Man, me and Kyle, like I said, we've been working together since we were 15 years old.
Wow.
And it's just, I think above everything else, we've always just wanted to find something that worked, find something that was attractive to the public, that we would be able to put on wheels and feel passionate about and, you know, to have success with. So I would say no, that we didn't. But as it started to happen, it's felt very natural. Mm-hmm. There's not been a single point, like even when moving to Nashville, where I felt like, oh, I don't belong in this, or, oh, I'm not, you know, like it's always very much felt. And I don't know if that's just because of how much I listened to it as a kid, or what, but it's, now that we're here, I'm very grateful, and it's a blast. Yeah. What about you, Kyle?
No, I did not expect to be doing this at any point in my life, but couldn't be happier that I'm here doing it. I mean, it's, you know, it's been so much fun, and seeing the growth of it firsthand has just been so exciting.
Anything you guys want to say about the future of this event? Like I said, you partnered with the biggest event marketing company in the world. What was the future of Boot Scoot USA?
Yeah, I mean, we would love to just keep expanding this as big as possible. You know, I think the easiest thing to compare it to is Emo Night. It's a huge dance party that's all over the country. You know, there'll be 5-10 of those going on the same night. We'd love to, you know, grow this thing as big as possible. And, you know, continue to travel and do what we love. We literally just got back from Panama City Beach and got flown out and put up in a hotel and food and paid to play country music on the beach. And it's like, we've, you know, we talk all the time about just now that we do this to pay our bills, sometimes it will feel like work, and we'll forget that us at 15 years old would be, have the biggest smiles on our faces knowing that this was our lives, you know, so... I can't even remember what the original question
well,
was.
Well, you answered it.
Okay.
I was going to say, I'm just over here smiling at your answer.
And K-Nex, we're going to end with your remix of Dolly Parton's Two Doors Down.
Yes.
And if folks like the music they've heard so far and want to hear more from you guys, you have an excellent SoundCloud page with mixes of country disco music. You have a Loretta Lynn tribute mix, all very well done.
Thank you.
So Boot Scoot USA on all social media and also on SoundCloud, right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
And the
really
website's bootscootusa.com.
Yeah.
We got lots of great merch on there, too. We appreciate y'all.
Any final thoughts before we listen to this Dolly Parton remix?
You are the man. Thank you so much for having us back on. Such an awesome moment to be back here with you, man.
So grateful. Can't wait to read that book when it comes out.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, guys. Pleasure to have you here again. Congratulations on all your success, and hope to see you in the future.
Edie.
Cultural Manifesto will return after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. Up next, I'll be speaking with Sarah Acra, the founder and leader of K-Pop Indiana. South Korean popular music, known as K-Pop for short, has become a dominating force in global popular music. Sarah created K-Pop Indiana as a community for fans of K-pop here in the state of Indiana. And Sarah Acra joins me now via Zoom. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your organization, K-Pop Indiana.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, appreciate it. And you're going to tell us about the history of K-pop Indiana, and you brought some great K-pop music to share with us also. But first, I wanted to give you a chance to share a bit about your background. Did you grow up here in Indiana, and what's your experience here in the Hoosier State?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was actually born in Seoul, South Korea, and I was adopted and raised here in Indiana. And attended Purdue University, where I joined an Asian interest sorority called Delta Phi Lambda. And that was really my big introduction to Asian culture, music, food, language. It was really immersive. And really the first time that I even heard about K-pop music was actually at Purdue. Mm.
And, you know, K-pop has experienced a meteoric rise in popularity over the last decade or so. It's now one of the dominant forms of popular music globally. You mentioned that you became a fan of this music during your time at Purdue as a college student, right? Tell us about what about this music spoke to you and kind of how you discovered it.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I did first find K-pop in college back in the early aughts, but I never really felt a connection to the music. It wasn't really something that I listened to on my own. It wasn't until actually 2018. I was watching the Jimmy Fallon show and BTS came on my screen and immediately was just intrigued by these seven boys dancing and singing and wanted to find out more and really just started my own research and went down the rabbit hole with K-pop. Everyone, I think, has their own K-pop story. And I always say that people find K-pop at a time in their life when they most need it. I think that it really speaks to people and transcends that language barrier, excuse me. So yeah, it really is something that brings different people together. And that's what I've really enjoyed about the music.
You know, I've been a fan of Korean pop music and folk music for a long time. I can remember a time not too long ago when Korean popular music was a very niche genre. And there wasn't a lot of awareness about the music outside of South Korea. There was a hip-hop group I used to be into called Drunken Tiger back in the 90s. And, you know, it would have been crazy to think that this group would have become, you know, had hits on the American charts. As I mentioned earlier, this music is now one of the dominant forms of global popular music. Groups like BTS are on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. You mentioned that this music crosses linguistic barriers and cultural barriers. Tell us what it was about the music and BTS that grabbed you in that moment and what you think it is that other people here in Indiana are getting from this music that's resonating with them.
I think mental health and mental health awareness is a big part of what draws people to K-pop music. Artists are really open with their fans about their personal struggles and how they get through those. And it's also in a lot of their lyrics. And so it really touches people and they feel those emotions. And I know personally, I was going through a rough time in my life when I found BTS. And I was amazed that, again, these seven guys from the other side of the world were really singing about things that were important to me and things that I was going through and that were really making a difference in my mental health on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's really what's helped grow it with the momentum and rise of K-pop as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you were so moved by this music that you started this organization, this group, K-pop Indiana, to connect with fellow fans of the music and share your love of K-pop music. Tell us kind of how, what inspired you to create this group? BTS had a role in that, from what I understand.
Absolutely. So in 2019, I attended a couple BTS concert movies, and that was a really new thing at that time. And after going to a couple of them, I realized there were hundreds of people going to these movies, which meant there were hundreds of K-pop listeners in Indianapolis. And I just thought, how neat would it be to kind of bring all of these people together and be able to talk about K-pop with other people who were enthusiastic about the music, who enjoyed the culture, who always wanted to learn more. And so I was really excited to hit social media and start finding people. I was lucky enough to host our first event on September 17th of 2019 and just invited the community to come out to Korean barbecue. We had about a dozen people at our first event. And from that point on, I just knew it was something that we needed as a community. And it's just been really amazing to grow this inclusive, informative community that's so diverse and interested in not just K-pop, but K-drama, Korean culture. And it's really great when we can all get together and share that.
Yeah, since you brought this up, I wanted to ask, you also have a group for fans of Korean dramas called K-Drama Indiana, is that right?
Yes, we do. After a couple months of K-pop Indiana, we had a lot of people asking about K-dramas and having events for them as well. So I was really excited to start the K-drama side. They do online watch parties in the summer. They do summer movies after dark where we have a big screen and they get together and watch movies. So it's a really nice opportunity for people who may not be into K-pop, but really interested more in the drama side.
And is there a big audience in Indiana for K-pop music, the Korean dramas? Tell us about the audience here in Indiana for this unique form of entertainment.
So when I first started listening to K-pop music, I had about four friends that I was able to convince to listen to K-pop music. And I really was worried that that was going to be my K-pop circle. But again, thanks to my wonderful volunteers on the admin team who've helped me grow the organization, we've gone from 5 members to over 355 registered members in the state of Indiana, which is so exciting. I honestly never thought we would be as big as we are, but I love that, and I love the community that we've been able to build.
Yeah, that's impressive. And Sarah, you brought a playlist of music to share with us, and I want to go ahead and jump into the music. The first song we'll be listening to is Bang 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 by Big Bang. They've been called the kings of K-pop. Tell us about this song and this group.
They are really K-pop royalty. As you said, they're often dubbed the kings of K-pop. They were the first big group who made it international, who toured worldwide. And they are often covered by younger K-pop artists because they are held to such a high standard. They are my personal favorite group, so I love everything about them. But Bang 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 is the ultimate classic K-pop song.
Yeah, let's listen. This is Bang 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 by Big Bang.
Bang Bang Bang!
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is Sarah Acra, the founder of K-Pop Indiana. And we're going through a playlist of music you brought to share with us today, Sarah. And the next song we're going to hear is Idol by BTS. You mentioned this is the group that got you into K-pop music. These guys are incredibly charismatic. I don't know what it is about it, but they're just kind of magnetic to watch. They did a Tiny Desk session for National Public Radio. It was one of the most watched Tiny Desk concerts ever done. Tell us about BTS and this song, Idol.
I'm so thankful for BTS for really bringing this wave back around for K-pop music. And Idol was the first song that I ever heard. And it really drew me into the music. After watching the music video, I just wanted to take in all of their content. And I had to add this to the list since it was my first K-pop song.
And they've become a very influential group, right? They performed at the UN. They met, I think they met Joe Biden at the White House. What is it about the music and the issues that they represent that's been so influential?
So, of course, we talked about the mental health piece, which I really do think is a big part of it. Them being very vulnerable with their fans, sharing every aspect of their life. They are very interactive, whether it's on their social media platforms, through fan meets, and on interviews, as we all see. They really work to meet their fans at any opportunity that they have. And that speaks volumes.
Yeah, let's listen to that track now. This is Idol by BTS.
Can't call me artist. Can't call me idol. What I had no idol, kept, I'm proud of it. 난
We just heard Idol by BTS, as selected by my guest this week, Sarah Acra of K-Pop Indiana. And Sarah, we've heard a couple songs from boy bands, and the next track we're going to hear is from a girl group. We're going to listen to the song I Can't Stop Me by Twice. Tell us about this group.
Twice is a classic K-pop girl group. They recently did their second U.S. tour and sold out in pre-sale twice. They have that bubblegum K-pop sound that many people will be familiar with. I Can't Stop Me is one of their newer tracks, and it's a great summer bop to put on when you're driving in your car.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. My guest this week is Sarah Acra, the founder of K-Pop Indiana. Let's return to our conversation. And Sarah, the next track on your playlist is Celebrity by the vocalist, is it pronounced IU, like Indiana University, right?
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. Tell us about IU.
She is the princess of K-Pop. Different from the other songs that we've already discussed, she's a solo artist. She's also an actress. She's also recorded original soundtracks for K-dramas and does more of the ballad side of K-pop. I think a lot of people think of K-pop and they think of these big groups doing these big, elaborate songs, but her style is also under the umbrella of K-pop, and really wanted to make sure that that was represented as well.
Yeah, it's a great track. Let's listen to Celebrity by IU. Sarah, the final song on your playlist is Congratulations by Eric Nam, who is an American-born K-pop star, right? Tell us about this track and Eric Nam.
Eric Nam is an American K-pop artist. He was raised in Atlanta. He performs in both Korean and English and is an amazing show. We've been fortunate enough that he came to Indianapolis a few years ago. And he's a great artist to listen to if you're new to K-pop. Being able to connect with some of his English songs are always great. That's why I picked Congratulations. It's an upbeat breakup song. It will make you feel good even when you're at a low point. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll listen to that song now. This is Congratulations by Eric Nam.
Congratulations, you finally mean it. Let's throw a party here tonight and raise up a glass to our last goodbye. Oh, oh, congratulations. Our last goodbye.
You lead and I'll pave the way. Let's end on a high note, baby. We both knew the day would come.
We just heard Congratulations by Eric Nam, one of five songs you brought to share with us today, Sarah. If our listeners want to learn more about K-Pop Indiana, they can find you at kpopindiana.com and at K-Pop Indiana on all social media platforms. You also have a big event for K-Pop Indiana members coming up on June 4th at Broad Ripple Park. Tell us about the event and some of the things you're going to be doing.
We are so excited. We just announced the date for our annual field day at Broad Ripple. It's a great opportunity for the community to come out and try K-pop choreo, Korean snacks, learn about the language, play games, and even do some crafts.
Any final thoughts you wanted to share, Sarah? Anything I didn't ask you about that you wanted to express to our listeners?
You know, I do want to share our motto. It is something that the admin team and I focus on for our community, and it is, we see you, we hear you, we love you.
Thank you so much for being here today and sharing this music, and good luck to you and K-Pop Indiana.
Thank you so much.
That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks to my guests, John Stamps, K-Nags, and Sarah Acra. Check out the Cultural Manifesto podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. Cultural Manifesto is hosted and produced by me, Kyle Long. Thank you for listening.